Wait, no.
Welcome back. This is John coming in from Vancouver here with Jason, who is in New York. Jason, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Good.
Pretty good.
Good, good, good. So this is going to continue our film series that we had done a month ago, and then someone forgot to upload the films that we reviewed, but that's all right. Hey, look, we're moving forward. We're not looking at the past. We're going to look forward.
That's right.
So today's film is arguably the most talked about sci-fi film of the last 2-3 years. Is that fair to say? Would you agree with that?
Oh, man. Yeah, I'd say so. It's definitely, it's probably, yeah, for sure. There's no doubt about it. Like, it's got more momentum and buzz than any recent Star Wars I can remember.
Right, as a series, right? It's like, and for those of you who haven't caught on yet, we are talking about Dune, and specifically Dune Part 2 that came out a couple of months ago. Came out March 1st. Yeah, like as far as series go, right? Sci-fi series, like you said, it's Star Wars, Star Trek to some degree. You could say some of the Star Trek stuff, but yeah, it's different. Go ahead.
The difference with Dune 2 specifically, because I don't remember this happening with 1, although Dune 1 came out, was that
came out like
pre-
pandemic or? Times, right?
That's what I was wondering if it was pre or post Pando, but like. Yeah.
During.
This has captured attention the way I don't think anybody really expected, in that like it almost has that Avatar level of event viewing, where it's back in IMAX this weekend and you still can't get good seats.
Yeah.
If any, like they are still selling out these special format showings of this movie, which is interesting because I don't even know if that's just fans constantly coming back. And maybe it doesn't have that same zeitgeist large appeal that Avatar seemingly has, which is interesting because you still don't hear about Avatar, but it still makes over $1 billion. Whereas I'm hearing about Dune. I'm hearing people talk about it, yet the box office is still coming in at, you know, respectable, but it's not blowing the doors off.
Right. So, and again, the thing with Dune as well, that's a little different from, let's say, Avatar. And different from Star Wars to some degree, is that Dune is based on a novel, right? It's built on a book from the 60s. Mm-hmm. And they've tried to make this before, right? Like they made a film in the 80s. They've kind of tried to push this. Dune has always had a cult following, right? Like I'd say some of the people that I work with that know, when you talk about sci-fi, most people say Dune is one of their favorite science fiction series. Like it falls off a cliff in some of the later books, but like the first books are slow. But it's like peak sci-fi. Like Dune is the father of the sci-fi genre as we know it now in books, right? And so that's a little different where, yes, there's lots of movies that are based on books and based on comics and based on television series, based on all sorts of stuff. But not to this level where it's like, it's something that's very hard to make into film was what I was told of like, yeah, this is going to be tough, right? Like trying to make Dune into a movie is going to be very difficult because it's really deep text. Like you got to really care about sci-fi and conlifts and language and all of this stuff to really try and understand it. And so that's why when the first movie came out, I was just like, okay, this is cool. And a lot of people are telling me this is cool, but I know nothing about Dune. I'm not a science fiction nerd to this level that I'm going to read a book from the mid 60s, right?
Yeah.
And so it comes out during the pandemic and it does very well for all, you know, well as far as like, you know, people aren't really going to the movie theater and yet it still kind of made, I'm trying to look up the numbers of how much the first Dune made.
I got the second one here.
So let me see if I can find the first one. Sorry. When you type in Dune, everything comes up as part two because that's what everyone's talking about.
There we go.
Right
got
now.
It. In the, so yeah, domestic 108 million, international almost 300 million. So, over 400.
And so again, look,
and
that's okay.
Already been
right. Like that's good,
50% higher.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It's already got three times its domestic gross.
Nearly. Yeah, like again, it's not Star Wars. You know the episode 7 or 8, right? If that works. No, sorry, that'd be episode 9, right? Like Star Wars comes out, and everyone's like, we got to go see this. Star Wars is back with news stories. It's not Marvel stuff where you're printing $1 billion. The first film like tripled its money, which you're like, that's pretty good for a real esoteric sci-fi film. So I think I didn't watch it in the movie theater, the first one. Did you watch it in the movie theater?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So I didn't, because again, I was like, well, I'll just see it when it comes out. And I'm going to say this, it's probably the movie that I've regretted the most not watching in the movie theater. Because as soon as it started, I was like, oh man, I should be in a movie theater watching this. Like the very first scene, the sound to it, the atmosphere, the scale of it on the first film. I looked and I just immediately thought, I was like, man, I'm real tempted to turn this off and try to find it somewhere in a movie theater. But by then it had been like 4 months, right? I wasn't going to find this replaying in a movie theater.
Right.
So I watched the first movie and really liked it. And it was deep, right? Like there's a lot of names. It's got Game of Thrones-ish, like, whoa, there's a bunch of names. There's a bunch of stuff here that I got to try to remember. But not to the level of Game of Thrones where I still don't know half the people's names in that series. I just don't. Like, I'm not going to remember their names. So I specifically was super excited about seeing this next one. And that's always a trap, right? Where you're like, the first one is kind of a cult following of a film, even though it's got a massive budget. You can sort of say it's like The Matrix in a lot of ways, right? Where like the first film, everyone's like, if you haven't seen it, a lot of people miss the first film. Go out and watch it, right? And then you watch it, and you're like, man, this is amazing. Look at this world that the director has built. And it's, so then everyone's like, okay, the second one's coming. The second one's going to be great. So obviously, for those of you who've not seen any of this, I've specifically not said any spoilers, go watch, I would say, my general review of this as a series, and I'm going to say this, and it's going to be very in the moment, knee-jerk reaction. Two greatest sci-fi films I've ever seen.
Wow. Better than John Carter of Mars, huh?
Yeah. I actually like John Carter of Mars.
I did too. It's fun.
Yeah, I thought it was really fun. I thought that movie was way better than it deserved. To me, this is the greatest two sci-fi films ever made.
Yeah, it's really good. I don't know if I could go that far.
I mean, name something better.
I don't know. That's the thing. Fifth Element. Bruce Willis running around shooting stuff. Fifth Element's
good. I mean, the Blade Runner stuff is good as well, right? Like, sure, there's a big distance between the two films, but Blade Runner and the new one is good. As a film...
I think if you're going to capture it like as a film, but as like a set of two, right? Like I've mentioned it before where oftentimes whenever you end something on a cliffhanger,
yeah,
and you know it's going to be a sequel, that is only made the full judgment of that piece will be made when that follow-up comes out.
Oh, Spider-Verse. So that's kind of
So that, yeah, exactly. So we don't know how good Spider-Verse Part 2 really is because we won't actually know, because it all depends on if the third part can follow through because it's incomplete. Yes. Dune 1 is decidedly incomplete because it's literally half of the book.
Right.
It's half of the first book. So it has to basically cut itself off at the end when Denis Villeneuve, the director, is just like, yeah, I'm done. Like this is as much as I could get in a movie. And then if this does well enough, or if I get approval, then I'll do the second part, and then we'll finish this story, this one piece of story. Right. So,
yeah,
in that sense, you're right. Like as a piece of sci-fi in its entirety, yeah, Dune 1 and 2 is like it's great. Phenomenal.
It's great,
and it's also well done. Like I can't really think of any flaws in the movies. And
there's some at the end of the second film. Like, again, if you just want to be critical, but honestly, like you said, like just like I'm looking at this in totality, right? Not just the actors, not just the story, but also just how they handled the environments. It's like really hard stuff to film, and the way that they used visual effects, the way they've used all of it it was perfect. Like the first 2 hours of this last part two, it's great. Like I couldn't name a better film as putting the two pieces together where you could really sit there for 5 hours and watch both of these movies, almost 6 hours and watch both these movies. And it feels like, okay, this was a good use of my time. This is an interesting story with characters' names who I remember. And it tells a very simple story kind of from start to end as far as just the main character, right? It's a very simple path of starts one way, ends another. And it's great. Again, I came out of this thing so floored because I was expecting to be like, okay, everyone, you know, when anytime something's hyped up, you're just like, all right, fine, right? Like it's the expectation things I've talked about since the end of time. and my expectations were through the roof and they were actually met. And that just doesn't happen. I'm super critical of stuff. And that just doesn't happen. Where I watch this, I go, I don't have anything to say. I love this film. I love it.
Nice. Yeah, it was very good. How did you see it?
So I saw it in IMAX.
Like what kind of theater?
So okay. I went to the IMAX theater in Vancouver, because surprisingly, for a town that has taken over the film, that been taken over by the film industry, there's only one IMAX movie theater here, and it's in Richmond. So if you know Vancouver, it's basically 30, 40 minutes away on public transport from like downtown Vancouver. So nice big IMAX screen. Some of the most uncomfortable seats though I've ever been in for an IMAX screen.
Yeah, some of them are like these older IMAX that they just kind of cram in these tiny ass seats.
Yeah.
And they're like, we made them comfortable, but they're like right up next to each other. Yeah, I can think of one IMAX that I've been to where I was like, this kind of sucks. And all the seats seem pitched forward for some reason. It's like, why is this?
Anytime a film like this comes out, I felt the same way with Avatar, even though I saw Avatar on a Dolby screen. Saw twice on Dolby screen, which is just right. For any of you who don't know, you're watching Avatar for the colors, not the size of the screen. Because Avatar was not filmed in IMAX, right? So it's filmed to hit a massive range of colors, where Dune, Oppenheimer are filmed for IMAX, or filmed for the scale. Also, you know, rich blacks and all the stuff you care about in an image. But it's specifically scale, right? Like it's filmed for that IMAX scale. So I would have loved to been at somewhere like Lincoln Center. Like I think I've talked about this before, where the only reason I love Ender's Game is because of where I saw it. It's the only reason. I've tried to watch that movie.
We saw it.
We saw it. That's right. That's right. You were with me. Yeah, yeah. I love that movie as well.
Yeah, we're like, when are we going to see this movie? And you're like, we're going to go at like 9 in the morning at this IMAX. I was like, fine.
Yeah, and then you went, and was it worth it?
It was great. I could have slept a couple extra hours. That's fine.
Do you miss it now? No. So anyways, dude.
What, the hours?
Two. Yeah, the hours. You don't miss the hours. You don't miss the hours.
Fair enough. I don't know. Who knows how my life would have gone.
So I've obviously given this a 5 out of 5. I'd given more if I could.
Yeah.
So we're getting spoiler territory now. And I guess briefly before we spoil this, just to give you the synopsis, if I can. This is basically the story of the Atreides family, there's a bunch of different sort of groups that rule planets across this fictional universe. And this is the story of the Atreides family who was given this planet to mine a resource, right? Which they call spice.
Yeah.
And they're basically given this planet as a setup in order to cause rift in the galaxy amongst other groups that also want this planet, because this spice is like this wanted resource. And so this is basically the story of this family, and specifically the youngest son, the only son, Paul Atreides, who was played by old Timothy Chalamet, and his story as he rises kind of from this prince, so to speak, into what happens at the end of this film. So that's the best way I can do this without spoiling it, really, because it is complicated. But if you watch it and you're really interested in it, it comes together pretty well.
Yeah, and it does a good job of managing all the threads. Like, you're never lost. You always get it. And I think that just speaks to the skill of Denis Villeneuve, right? Because he's able to stitch all these things together. And I feel like if he was forced to mash this into one movie, even if it was a 3-hour movie, it would not work. The fact that it is over two movies is like, you get this sense of, he kind of works it where, all right, this is the real villain of this movie. Okay, now here's the new villain of this movie.
Yeah.
It's like, here's this side, here's that side. Like, I kind of wonder, you know, there's a whole thread with the Emperor in this movie that is not at all covered in the first one.
No.
And it's like, and you wonder, you think about it for a minute, you're like, did we need that guy to just show up in the second movie, or could he have been teased in the first one? And it's like, no, it was probably better to, because there's so many people in the first one who, spoiler alert, don't make it to the second one. So what's the point really of introducing these other players who don't have much to do until this part of the story, until the part where they actually have relevance? So I think that was a pretty good decision.
Yeah. Overall. And there's a bunch of characters in the first film you know, Jason Momoa being one of them, right? Who are big names, right? Big names who you bring on to tell, to go, okay, this is a character that is going to be part of this franchise. And again, it's very Game of Thrones-esque in that way, where it's like, hey, we're going to get Sean Bean and we're going to kill him off. Sorry, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Game of Thrones, we're going to kill him off. You know, he plays a very specific part in the story, and there's kind of a main thread of characters that will make their way through, but you'll never know if whether or not they'll make it to the next film or not. Right? Like, it's sort of, it's about the story. It's about the planet of Arrakis and all the things that happen on this planet with all the people who are in it, whether it's the people who are the natives of that land, whether it's the first level of intruders, whether it's the people who come in to try and make some type of fair deal out of this situation that's become a mess, right? So it's more about the planet and the atmosphere. And for me, that's what Dennis does great. Like, you feel this planet in a way that I'd even say from Avatar, right? Like, one of the things about Avatar was people going, oh, Pandora is so beautiful, right? You want to live in Pandora. Where this is almost the opposite, where it's like, yeah, you don't want to live here. This place is awful. And it's hot, it's dusty, it's a mess. There's like a hallucinogenic substance in the sand. There's these giant worms that come out of the ground. This is awful, yet you feel how big it is and how the people, so to speak, the humanoid characters, so to speak. There's no real like aliens, but they are aliens because they're not from Earth. That, you know, that they are just small and significant parts of this as individuals, but obviously as collectives, they become more important. And learning how to live in this environment is really what the part two of this film is. The first part is sort of, we've landed on this planet, and we're trying to make it, and a bunch of terrible stuff happens. And the second film is, okay, great. All this terrible stuff has happened. How do we basically start from nothing, throw away all of the privileges, and how do you rise to ascension to claim what is yours, right? So it's that's the second story. And look, that story is a story that's as old as time, really. And is, you know, it's kind of an origin story in a way. Like, you could easily watch this second movie, other than not understanding anything that's going on with the planet or the people or the worms or why the Emperor floats. Or not the Emperor, why the Harkonnen dude floats. Then, yeah. Like, you know, then for the most part, you could easily tell the story of just like, this is someone who started from nothing and then becomes king, basically, becomes king of this planet.
Yeah, it's not really nothing, though. Well, I guess he starts with a bunch, then he becomes
It starts with a ton. Nothing. Yeah, but I still feel like you could drop into this and you'd be very confused in the beginning. But then the very theme of the story is very simple of, hey, this guy's got to lead an army and he's got to learn the ways of these people in order to take back what's his. That's a very, you know, I mean, hell, that's the theme of Avatar in a way. Like, that's a theme of a lot of films of you join the natives and you become one with them in order to, you know, to go back to what's rightfully yours and own it.
Right. I had one spoiler that was given to me. So I didn't realize that. It's like, I guess we're doing spoilers, right? Spoilers now? Spoilers on?
Yes. Yeah, we're spoiling.
All right, cool. So, and this is kind of, this might do a little spoiling of Messiah in a way. I don't know if that's cool with you or not.
That's fine.
Dune Messiah would be the next movie.
Yes.
So I was listening to a podcast. I was listening to Dana Gould's podcast, and he was talking a lot. He was talking to a guy who basically did a documentary, I think, or wrote a book about David Lynch's Dune. And at one point, Dana Gould's like, who's a comedian, he's like, this is basically the story about how someone becomes space Hitler.
I mean, a little bit, yeah.
And I was just like, hold on, what? I'm like, oh shit, okay, so something's gonna go down.
Yes.
And then I guess Messiah gets more into that.
Yeah.
So I actually, but so at the end, so I'm like, oh, okay, so at some point, this is going to, you know, Timothy is going to take a bit of a villain turn.
Yeah. And look, I would argue that's sort of the thing that if you can critique anything, the last 30 minutes of the movie is a lot of stuff crammed into together, right? Because they had to wrap this thing up, and it's a big battle scene that then turns into like this one-on-one duel inexplicably in like this. And then you find out that, you know, we're doing spoilers now, so please turn this off. You find out that he is actually the grandson of the Baron of the Harkonnen. that they just sort of drop like real. It's like a big thing that they're just like, okay, 30 minutes in or 30 minutes out. Great. You're his daughter, and that makes you his grandson. So, yeah.
Yeah, great. But that didn't really matter.
No, it didn't matter, but it does show.
It was more, it worked the way they did it because it wasn't so much about, it didn't, the interesting thing about that is it has nothing to do with the, it has nothing to do with the Harkonnen. It has more to do with the Bene Gesserit. Like the
No, that's the point though. The point I was trying to make was basically it's showing you that there is this duality of people, right? The Harkonnen and the entire movie are painted as these creepy black and white, you know, violent, you know, creatures from another planet. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you find out, well, this runs in your blood as well. So it's like, you are not just this, the savior of all people. You have your own ulterior motives in this that will come to fruition in the next movie. That's how I saw it at the end. Basically, this is now
a young
ruler who is completely conflicted of, well, what do you do? Do you follow this way? Do you follow that way? You learn the ways of these people, and then you're kind of like, great, thanks for the help, but I don't need you anymore. I'm back to being king, right? So it's like, I totally saw that at the end of going, oh yeah, if there is a third movie that's made, this turns sideways. This dude is, it's a bit of the, you know, Star Wars, Darth Vader thing of like, oh, I think everything's cool, but then now you're learning, ooh, okay, a little too far. And now you're going to start doing some stuff that is maybe questionable. So no, I totally got that. You wouldn't reveal that they're related unless you wanted to sort of say, hey, this blood is now mixed in a way that makes things very complicated. He is not just on one side. He is on all sides, which makes it very complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. I was also thinking about the, just trying to find, it's Bene Gesserit, right? Is that what they are called?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's how you say it.
Yeah, like creating the larger rift between them because Rebecca Ferguson's character, her, like, the same way being like, yeah, fuck all you guys. And like, kind of, I'm going to get, you know, like, screw you guys. So by allying themselves with the Fremen and like using all this technology that he had before, it's like, yeah, all right, we don't really need anybody.
Yeah.
Like at the end, it's like, yeah, now we're just going to basically take over.
Right. Exactly. It's like, we no longer need any of these structures. We're going to build our own. And like you said, that always turns a little, you know, that doesn't go the way that you think it does, where everyone is going to live in peace and harmony. There's going to be some people who need to die and some people who need to suffer.
Well, that literally is what happens at the end, right? He says, he's like, leave or die. And they're like, no. And he's like, all right. They're going to die. So the biggest difference, I looked it up, and the biggest difference between this and the book, at the end at least, is that Zendaya's character, Chani, she's like cool with it in the book. Like the whole decision at the end.
She was not cool with it here.
No, she was like, I'm out.
Yes.
Bye.
Like literally, she was just like, I'm out. And she got on a worm and she went away.
It's the kind of thing that's interesting, right? Because I don't know why he made that choice, because was it only to make it more obvious that Paul as a character is just kind of like, this guy seemingly might be losing his way, and like the only way you could reinforce that is if there's this rift between her as well.
That's my take. You've got to show that duality, that he is no longer a man of the people. He is a man of politics at this point, right? He is going to marry the emperor's daughter because he is trying to cement his place as basically becoming the emperor is what
he also seems like. It all seems like it's everything he's trying to do is like for the greater good.
It seems like it, but again, that's always
that seems
like
what he's going for, because he drinks the worm juice, the Kool-Aid. Yeah, and now all of a sudden he could like see everything. Like it's kind of wild. Like that's how she was able to that's how they were able to finally tell that he was the grandson of that guy,
right?
And
that brought him an unmeasurable level of confidence. To just go, okay, I've seen it all. Good. This is what's going to happen. And I mean, it's very Doctor Strange, Infinity War-esque of, I've seen all the paths. This is the path we're taking. And you might not agree with the path, but this is
the least bad. This is the least bad option.
Right. Yeah, so you're going to question his least bad option because you're like, are you sure that's the least bad option? Then all these people got to die. So, yeah, I totally see that happening in the third movie. Has he agreed to make a third movie? Because before that was sort of the discussion of him being like, I don't know.
They were kind of cagey about Dune too, but there's no way they can't do Dune Messiah, right?
At this point, I think they have to, right?
They officially confirmed Villeneuve will make a third Dune movie, Messiah. So this was August 10th. Yeah, so don't know when. They said it'll be a while.
I mean, at this point, I'm like, take your time, man. Make it good. Like, if it takes you 5 years to make it, then so be it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and I think it takes place. I'm not going to spoil anything. I looked up everything that happened.
Yeah, well, don't spoil it. But
I'm not going to spoil that. No, I'm not going to say anything. But, like, it does take place, like, many years later.
Yes. Yeah. So I mean, by then.
So it's fine. Like, if you get a little more grizzled, you know, a little
Chalamet,
chunkier.
That's fine.
Chalamet, you know, someone who's fine. maybe put on a little bit of dad weight, you know? Let's see.
Eating some of that Willy Wonka chocolate, he'll be all right.
Exactly. Yeah. Also, apparently, the other thing about this movie is like the baby is that's different from the book is that the baby was apparently born already.
Okay.
And then it's just like a bunch of people could straight up talk to this baby.
like straight out the womb, the baby's just
ready to talk. Yeah, like the baby's just straight up talking. Yeah. I don't know if it's like literally or, you know, just like through telepathy, but, you know, baby,
it's just
straight up.
It's just funny that Anya Taylor-Joy is like the, you know, that they show like that's the uncredited sort of like cameo of like, this is who the baby becomes. And like before this movie, you see the trailer for Furiosa, which she's also in. And it's like very similar worlds in a way, at least in front of my movie, right? They played the Furiosa trailer. And I was like, that's a little like, is she in too much? Because now I'm like, wait a minute. Now I'm going to start getting these two confused because
I need to shout out this theater I went to. I saw it last week. It was the only theater showing it in a not standard format. So I got to see it in 20mm. And the other cool thing about this theater, so it was a Cinema 1-2-3. And it was like they just straight up started it. There was no trailers. They said this thing's starting at this time. They gave people about 10 minutes to get to show up, and then bam, starting. No trailers. I was like, this is awesome. There's something very nice about sitting down and then the movie starts. Like, you don't have to deal with all this nonsense and like, hey, did you know about Coke? No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I didn't. Tell me about Coca-Cola. What is this? I never heard of it. Did you know we have popcorn? Yes, I did. And oh, by the way, here's 25 minutes of trailers, which I like trailers, but sometimes just want to, when you're sitting around, if the movie's over 2 hours, I just want to watch the movie. I just want to get into it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I hear you. She was also Princess Peach, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, again, she's her and Chalamet. There's like a list of like five of them that are. I mean, Zendaya as well. There's a list of five of them that are just like in everything.
I mean, Josh Brolin.
Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff too, and Austin Butler, right? Austin Butler is in
now. He is. Yeah. Yeah, Austin Butler. I think he was a little overhyped for me going into this movie because
it was a
show.
Lot.
He's so good. I'm like,
yes,
he's barely in it.
Yeah, he's not in it much. I mean, and then when he is in it, like the thing that happens, like at the end, he's just like, this guy's pretty good. And then it's just like, all right, now we're going to fight. And it was just like, wait, what? Like, there's no real tension between, like, this guy was just a plot device to just go like, oh, there's this other thing lurking. But I was like, he just kind of stood around for a lot of it. He has the one thing now, again, that's probably my favorite sequence, just the way that was handled on in the Harkonnen gladiator arena, how it's all black and white. Cool. And then like the fireworks are like weird, you know, like galaxy like explosions. And I'm just like, that's a really cool. Like, this feels foreign to me. This feels like being, you know, a lot of times like, oh, I'm on a different planet, but this could be Egypt or this could be the Amazon, right? With that, I was like, no, that just feels like a totally different planet. That feels like a different world, different atmosphere, like a very foreign, scary place. And that's like, this is where he gets that scale and that feeling right, that atmosphere right of the film. which helps. And Hans Zimmer making the soundtrack to it, of course, is just like, yeah, that's, again, it's when you look at all the pieces individually and you put them together, that's why I'm like, this is the greatest two sci-fi films I think I've ever seen. Because all of the pieces work together. Yes, there's some story things that I think are a little lacking, but not the way that it falls apart in some Star Wars stuff. Or not the way that the sound and some other stuff maybe feels a little hokey, or the environments feel a little small, right? Where this just captures all of it. I can't speak highly enough about this film. I'm ready to see whatever is coming next. Again, I hope he takes his time. I don't need him to rush through to try to make a movie in 2 years. If this thing takes 5 years, then cool. This is one of the first film. This is probably the first two films that I've ever watched where I personally go, oh, that'd be fun to work on. That does not happen. That's happened twice. It's happened with this and it happened with the Apes films. And I worked on it. So I'm like, great, that's achieved. But now this is like, huh, this would be pretty fun to work on, even though it's probably a nightmare. So I'll leave it with that. It looks great, sounds great. Story's great. If you get a chance to see this in IMAX, even though we're a little late to recording this, if they replay it, definitely go. It's worth it. I think it's out on streaming now. Yeah, it's back on IMAX. Yeah, I think it's on streaming now, which again, it's fine. You can watch it. You're just going to miss that feeling, but you have to see it in the movie theater. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch it on your Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
And then you can basically be in a movie theater. There you go. Yeah. Why not?
Much cheaper though to pay $25 for the ticket versus the $4,000 for the headset. But hey,
yeah. If you extrapolate the cost of all of the movies you watch on your Vision Pro, how many movies would you have to see before you? This movie cost me $25 to see.
Yeah, not cheap. Going to the movies is not cheap. But 20 millimeter,
not IMAX. At the Cinema 123. All right. Now I used to have the AMC pass, but I'll talk about this in the regular episode. Like, I haven't seen, this is the first movie I've seen in a theater. This is like the first movie I've seen in like 2 months, maybe 3 months. A long time.
Again,
Wonka,
a lot of people,
was the last movie I saw in theaters.
Oh, that's funny. A lot of people, yeah. I mean, again, this is the bigger theme, which we can talk about, because I've actually seen another movie in the movie theater, which we'll talk about on the main show. But like, this to me is like, this is what it's going to take to get people to the movie theaters. It needs to be big spectacle. And again, that doesn't mean just throw a bunch of superheroes and things at the screen. It's like, you got to show people stuff they've not seen before, and people will pay $25-$30 to go to an IMAX movie theater if the visuals and the spectacle and everything is worth it. And I think that's kind of the thing, right? No one wants to sit in a movie theater to watch something that they could totally watch at home. It needs to be a reason for me to pay you $25. Plus, if you've got a family of four people and you go to a movie theater, that's $100 tickets, done. Now include snacks and everything else. That's probably another $100. So you're spending $200. That's got to be a spec. That's got to be something that's at the level of a sporting event. It's got to be. And if it's just something that's like, it's 2 hours and 30 minutes of a bunch of nonsense, people are just going to, they're not going to take the risk. They're going to watch it at home on their own time where they can pause it. They can start it early in the morning. They can do it whenever they want to. And so film industry's got to understand, like, if you put the big, like, I think Furiosa is going to do very well. Like, that's another film. Yeah, no big doubt. Big Absolutely. Spectacle, right? Even though looking at the trailer, I'm not intrigued by Furiosa the way I was for Fury Road. I'm just not. It just feels a little smaller to me. But again, I'm still going to see it. I'm going to go see it, and I'm going to see it in IMAX. I'm going to pay the money. So, yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, yeah, look, that's Dune 2. We spoiled it, but not really.
Yeah, we didn't spoil a ton.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't spoil it because it's a long story to get through.
So now you know about as much as I do.
So definitely didn't want to see it. Dive into the weeds, but it's definitely worth seeing. Again, I give it. It's a perfect rating for me. At that, and again, I'm a hard grader. It's perfect.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's really, really well done. Recommend it to everybody who hasn't seen it, which is not a lot of people who I roll with.
Yeah. Most people that the fact that Alice watches it and likes it tells me that it's pretty good, because she does not care for sci-fi.
Was she rooting for the Harkonnen?
Exactly. She's like, I'm rooting for them to end this whole thing. No. It was good. Again, it's a good story. It's a good story that even care about, if you know, it's not a bunch of aliens. Like, the most alien thing in there is the worms, really. And again, there's two sequences that I really love. One where he learns to ride the worm, of just how they handled that. Where it's sort of, you know, you get a sense of how big this thing is and how difficult this process is, and the Harkonnen fight of just, it's great filmmaking, and it's done in a way where it could be a typical action sequence really, and a fight sequence, but it actually feels like it doesn't feel like it's overdone like the Marvel stuff does, where you're like, great, just a bunch of people fighting and this doesn't mean anything. It felt like it had stakes in both of those.
Yeah. You're also, you know, you kind of talked about the filmmaking, but you are also watching the, you know, the creation of a master here. Like, is there any doubt that he is one of the best living directors, Denis Villeneuve? Like, Dune Part 1, 2, Blade Runner, yeah, or 2049, Arrival, Sicario. I don't know about the others, but since Sicario, those are like all killer movies. And that's, so Sicario 2015, Arrival 2016, Blade Runner 2049, 2017, Dune 2021, Part 2, 2024.
He's got a very Nolan-esque ramp that he's on.
Yeah. Oh, Prisoners.
He's not won an Academy Award yet. I think he's definitely going to definitely think he's going to win. I don't think he's won an Academy Award yet.
No.
It's coming. He's going to get an Academy Award for something in this film. I think this film cleans up from a visual effects standpoint. This is going to clean up everything. it just is.
And the thing that makes it work too is it's effort. It looks effortless.
Yes.
You're not beaten over the head, because even in the parts of the movie that look foreign, to your point, like, they're not blasting you with special effects to be like, ooh, look at all this shit. It's actually the opposite. It's done
in a way that tells the story, right? It tells the story, yep, and that's what you want. And it's like, people don't like visual effects when it doesn't tell the story, when it's just, let's throw a bunch of crap on screen to distract you. And that's this, all, everything that's there feels like it's been placed there for a reason. And that's pretty spectacular. Like, looking at his films at the box office, he's basically almost doubled his last three films in box office. So yeah, he's going to get whatever he wants from Arrival. And again, I love Arrival. Arrival is a fantastic film as well. Yeah. That movie's great. Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, Dune Part 2, they all progressively are making more and more money as he gets bigger and bigger budgets. So yep. Yeah. All righty. Yeah. That's it. Fun National Podcast. Rep. No, not Fun National Podcast. Look at that.
Wow.
This went back in time.
Shit.
He's abroad.
Holy shit.
See, this is what happens when we don't do this regularly. I forget.
What do you mean? What's this week's shit? You fucked it up.
Well, you've been messing around for a month, which we'll talk about in the next episode. He's abroad. You can find us online, socials, he'sabroad.com. View us, rate us on wherever you get your podcast. And yeah, I don't know how you end this. I never start and end these things. So I'm just going to stop talking and you'll play the clip and we'll be done.
Great.
Oh, shuck it, duck it now.